This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
In for Stormy today, I am Dave Ross. This is the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings Sportsbook alongside Michael Lombardi. Boy, Michael, on the drive in, you know, I was like, wow, we get to talk national championship, what we saw there, I'll get ready for the NFL. And then, bam, Stephanie, our fine producer, says, did you hear the news? And I'm like, yes, I just heard it on the radio coming in that the big news here of this hour, Michael, is the Titans have relieved Mike Vrabel of his duties as the head coach of the Tennessee Titans after 6 years. And, you know, it's always great doing the show with you, but what a perfect opportunity to do the show with you and pick your brain on this breaking news. I know this is something you might have seen coming when others didn't. I certainly did not see this, but you're clearly much, much more connected in this space in what's going on in the front offices. So it's not surprising to you, while it's probably surprising to most, correct?
Well, I think there's, I reported this on the GM Shuffle. We talked, Femi and I talked at length about, there has been conflict within the building. And, you know, there is, this is what happens when you hire a general manager that didn't hire their coach. Mm-hmm. The visions don't align. And I think ultimately what Amy Adams, the owner of the Titans, decided was she's going to go with Rand Carthon, let him rebuild the team, get himself his own coach, and let Mike Vrabel go. She claims she didn't try to trade him. She just thought it was cleaner to do it this way and move forward. She believes in the release, that they have a bright young quarterback and a nucleus of very good young players. We shall see if that proves to be correct. But here's what you have to know. As bettors and as anybody involved in football, the number one job of any general manager is to get the right head coach. The number two job is to get the right quarterback short and long term. Tennessee yesterday, when they went to bed, they had one of those coaches that was the best coach. Today they wake up, they still have two problems. Now, they think they have the quarterback in Will Levis. We shall see. But Mike Vrabel, you know, people say, well, now he's number one on the list. Mike Vrabel's on a different list, okay? Mike Vrabel's on a, we're going to hire that guy if I can get him. And his agent, Neil Kornreich, just so happens to represent Bill Belichick. Mm. So I don't know what's going on behind the scenes. Everybody's tying him back to the Patriots. I can't see him going back to the Patriots and replacing Belichick if they make that move. Could I see him going back to the Patriots? Perhaps. Mm. And eventually replacing Belichick. So I think there's a lot going on behind the scenes here that people don't know and are not aware of, and they're trying to use two connections to make a simple solution.
Fascinating, because I think when you think of the Titans, for the last at least 6 years, right? You thought Vrabel first, like this is the identity goes through the head coach here, and then the tentacles from that were the Derrick Henrys and the Ryan Tannehills, and maybe all those guys are going to be out now, right? And it's out with the old and in with the new there, according to Amy Adams in her statement. But you mentioned the list, right, that there's a short list of guys out there for candidates for jobs that are opening, and there's not that many jobs right now to be had. How does that change the equation for, you know, the Chargers, potentially the Raiders, you know, other teams that maybe you go, we had our eye on this guy, and we'll get to Harbaugh and all those things too. Does he go right to the very front of all of those lines, or is it a certain job for Vrabel that would be the right job?
I think Vrabel, you know, when you go through it, David, when you go through this program of the NFL and you're in situations which I call, sometimes you're in a situation you can only grow from and sometimes you can make a difference in. And when you're in one of these where you really can't make a difference, where you don't have as the control over your team, where the roster, the guy controlling the roster and you don't see eye to eye, there's political conflict within the building, you have no chance to win. And once you go through that, the next job you take, you don't take unless you have that alignment. People talk about alignment, but everybody's on the same page. Yeah, that's true. Everybody's on the same page till the first game. And then when you lose, then the alignment gets a little messed up. Alignment and being on the same page are two different things. The next job Vrabel takes, he'll have complete alignment within the building he goes to. Whether he goes, sits out a year and waits, because he certainly could do that, or whether he goes somewhere and waits, he could do that. Or he takes a job like Atlanta where he could run the program. I think that ultimately he's going to have his pick of whatever he wants to do, and I don't see money being an issue.
6 years, three playoff appearances, did get to an AFC title game, and they led that game 17-0 against the Chiefs. I think people have already forgotten that before the Chiefs really flipped the script there. So, yeah, it feels like if he wants work, he won't be out of work very longer. You mentioned New England, and we don't know what's going to happen with Belichick there. But when you mention a kind of a reunion there, could you see, like, let's bring in McDaniels, you know, bring Josh back, bring Vrabel back, and they go back to their old roles and run it back?
I could see it. I could see it. You know, now, look, you know, that's got to be – first of all, you know, you have – if you try to do that, Vrabel's got to be amenable to it. I don't know. I didn't talk to Mike. I don't know if he would want to come and be a coach in waiting. Because, you know, Bill's – how many more years is Bill going to coach? Five, three, two? I don't know. But I think that once he has a meeting, which he has, with Robert Kraft, and they've aired what they need to do, there'll be a plan in place. Either Bill will be there or there'll be a different plan in place. Certainly with McDaniels available and his relationship with the Kraft family, along with Bill, that's an easy one. But, you know, and he still owns a home in the Boston area. He never sold his home when he became the Raiders head coach. His family stayed back there. So there's certainly a lot of connectivity you can make, but nobody really knows what Mike is thinking, because I think this caught Mike off guard. You know, the owner kind of went in there anticipating that, you know, maybe she was going to have to make amends. I fully expected her to realize, I think I need to make sure Mike's okay before I make sure Rand's okay. But she clearly went down the Rand direction, which just fits kind of what Bill Walsh has said since he got in the league in the early 60s and the 70s, is whoever's talking to the owner on a daily basis, it matters more than the coach.
Wow. Absolutely fascinating the way these things and these tentacles go. And now we've seen the way that the Titans go. To that end, very quickly, Michael, when you look at Tennessee, Rand Carthon, Amy Adams, what their vision is this a guessing game as to what they want to do? When you're moving on from Vrabel, to your point, what's better than Vrabel out there? Maybe there is, and maybe they're going to find what they're looking for.
There's nobody. I mean, it's going to be hard to find somebody better than Vrabel today. Maybe they could get lucky and find another Vrabel and take some time. Maybe they will. You know, and Rand Carthon will get a guy that he's comfortable working with, that he feels that he can, you know, work, and they can work in concert together. Okay, great. That works. However, that being said, I think, to me, it's going to be a growing process. And if they think they have the quarterback situated with Levis, then I need to go back and watch tape, or they need to go back and watch tape. I don't think anybody in that building on the coaching side thinks that Levis is the guy. And certainly we know that Vrabel doesn't think he's the guy, because he would have played Tannehill for most of the time. We know Malik Willis isn't the guy. So I think that's going to just continue to stew. But now you have now Rand Carthon can go out there and he can go get the guy that he wants. And that'll bring harmony within the organization. Does that mean you're going to win? No. That doesn't mean you're going to win, but at least you have everybody on working towards one common goal.
Yeah, and again, we've got a lot of coaching news that we want to get to throughout the program here for the next 2 hours. I do want to bring up this report from Josina Anderson of CBS Sports, that the Patriots made, quote, informal inquiries regarding Bill Belichick, the Panthers have inquired about Bill Belichick from the Patriots. Like, would that make sense to you, Michael, that if you go, all right, if Bill really wants to move on, there are obviously other suitors out there. We'll find out what DC is going to do now that Ron Rivera has been officially removed from his post. Like, this is going to be for Bill, if he really wants to look at other places are looking at him.
Well, yeah, just like Mike Vrabel. Everybody thought Mike Vrabel would go back. He's too good of a coach. Now, all of a sudden, everybody's list is different. You know, everybody's list, the Commanders' list just got different. The Panthers' list just got different. You know, Arthur Blank's list just got different down in Atlanta. And I think, to me, what I've learned being in this league is sometimes patience is a virtue. If you take a step back and let the area declare what's happening, you have a better picture of what could happen. And so it makes, to me, you know, asking if Kraft and Belichick are going to continue their relationship, it's really not about that as much. You can't say we're bringing Bill back for a year, especially in light of where the team is right now. You're either bringing him back for 3 years, 5 years, and you have a plan in place to succeed him, or you're going to have to make the decision to go somewhere else. And I can't really say where that's going. I think it's got to be really up to Kraft
Yeah, as a former GM in this league, knowing how what it takes to succeed, you know, I've heard this, that normally it's a great young quarterback paired with a great defensive mind, right? And we know Belichick, that's clearly his specialty, and Vrabel, too, comes from that same cloth. Do you believe in that kind of formula, or do you think there's many ways to potentially get it done?
Well, I think one of the things that always concern you, and we've seen this in Los Angeles, is when you go strictly with somebody you think, or Jacksonville, I should say, you end up not having a very tough team. I think Jacksonville's biggest issue is there's no toughness on their team. You know, you got a play caller as a head coach in Doug Peterson. Yes, he's won a Super Bowl, but, you know, I mean, right now, their team and Trevor Lawrence, for all the conversation, somebody put on Twitter, David, you compare Trevor Lawrence numbers to Mac Jones, and they're somewhat similar. Oof. Now, I know you can do anything with numbers, but it's kind of scary that it's even close, right?
Yeah.
But he certainly doesn't look like the first overall pick. So that rhetoric that we've been reading about for 2 years, well, Peterson's made him better. No, not really true. Not true. You can say it, but like a lot of things people say, they're not true, you know? And so I think, to me, you got to pair him up with somebody who can build the team. I know, I understand that Brady played offense, defense, kicking game, kicked the field goals, taped the players, did everything, and that's the reason the Patriots won 6 Super Bowls, and Belichick had nothing to do with it. But when you go back through history and you look over what teams win championships, it takes a great head coach and a great quarterback.
I mean, Tom Landry butted heads with Roger Staubach. I mean, it happens, right? We know this throughout the course of NFL history, that's for sure. Michael, fascinating stuff. Much more on what's going on. The coaching pool just got deeper. But when we come back, let's put a bow on college football and talk about what we saw last night. Hail victors. That's next here on the Lombardi Line. If you're looking for a betting edge through the NFL playoffs, the Super Bowl, the VSiN experts have got you covered. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get access to our daily best bets with a leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the current on hand. Betting splits show you where the money and the bets are moving for every single game. Plus, betting systems, premium analysis, 24/7 video access. Sign up today. Get your first 30 days for only $9.99 to see everything VSiN has to help up your betting game. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe and sign up now. Back alongside Michael Lombardi, I am Dave Ross. It is all over. College football has come to an end. Makes me a little sad each and every Tuesday when this happens, Michael. But hail victors. Michigan gets the easy win. Easy cover, by the way. 34-13. Total stays under 56.5. Actually, some late money came in to push it down a little bit. I saw some 55s out there. Michael, I got to be honest with you. I was surprised by this one. I was rooting for Harbs in a way, but I thought it was too high of a number. Boy, was I wrong. They won the line of scrimmage. They win the game easily. What's your biggest takeaway from Michigan now becoming national champions?
Well, I mean, I spoke up there this August. I talked to the team. It was one of the most connected teams I've ever been around in my life. I've been fortunate enough to be around a lot of great teams. And just walking in that building, just being around that team, you could feel it in the air. You really could. So winning didn't surprise me. The toughness of their team didn't surprise me. I was really impressed with their ability to handle the skill, take away the deep ball from Washington, you know, and I think with their ability to make Washington put 10 or 12 good plays together without giving them that explosive, and their ability to run the football, where Washington really lost gap control in the game early and build that lead, they were just a dominant team. And I could tell, Washington and laying the points. I was with you. But from the very first drive of the game, you knew that was wrong. Mm. They controlled the game from the minute the game started. There was never a doubt. And their hardest game was Alabama, not Washington. And that doesn't dismiss anything from Washington. Just Washington just didn't have enough to make a difference in the game and stop it. And we said yesterday on the Lombardi Line with Femi, we agreed that if you like Michigan, take the under. If you thought Washington was going to win, take the over. That proved to be true. You know, I just didn't see the dominance of the Michigan run game against Washington, and they really just kicked their butt up front. It was a great win for Jim. I'm really happy for him because his team is much like his personality, mentally tough.
Yeah, I saw it the exact same way, kind of a correlated play there. I thought we'd get more points, and I thought Washington would be in this game. And I think what happens now is, it is funny you say that, like the Bama game was the tougher game. I made the analogy last week. It was almost like the 1980 Olympics, right? USA beats the Soviet Union. And it's like, well, they still have to go play the gold medal game. That was against Finland. Not to say that Washington turned out to be Finland, but it did feel like Bama was the big one, right? And then they get through that. You wonder if sometimes it takes a little bit out of you and you still have to play that final game. That was not the case, certainly for Michigan last night. On the Michael Penix side, and I know I went, I mean, just wowed by what we saw against Texas. And then last night, you saw him miss some throws that we haven't seen him miss in big spots. The fourth down play in the second quarter really kind of was a backbreaker early for Washington. What did you take away from Penix in that performance? Because I know some are going to do the revisionist. Well, he was never that guy. No, he really was against Texas. Does this translate next level, or do we have to take a pause and really look at that tape from last night?
Well, I think, look, every quarterback has a hard time when they're getting under pressure, when the game speeds up, right? When the game speeds up and there's not enough balance within the attack, they couldn't really run the ball. That became a real issue for them. So there was no real easy plays to make. And yeah, he missed some throws. I mean, the touchdown pass he had earlier in the game, you know, where there's a holding and he points out to it. I think that was obviously, he shows his ability to scan the field and make throws, but you know, the receiver that in that second quarter where they missed that throw, I think he thought the receiver was going to break outside, and the receiver took it too far in. Again, you know, when you're playing a game and the speed of the game is really bad, I think that's the issue. And so I think you have to be, you know, you have to temper it. Look, you're going to get it. You're going to be under pressure. There's no question at quarterback. And you're not going to have your best day when you're under pressure. And that's kind of how I look at it. They did a great job of taking away his deep ball and forcing him to have to take the shorter throws constantly with pressure on him.
Great point. Like, you watch Washington in the Texas game and Washington pretty much throughout the year, it's deep shots that Caleb DeBoer's offense takes, right? Last night, they almost became a screen team. So you saw that early, right? That they said, all right, we got to switch this up because we don't have the time to let these plays develop down the field. Was that really the difference offensively for Washington?
Yeah, I think that's the case, right? So, I mean, look, I think what they did a great job of, Michigan, all throughout this playoff series was game planning. The defensive staff particularly, they game planned Milroe perfectly. And then last night they game planned Penix perfectly too. They forced them to take away the deep throws. They forced them to play outside their comfort zone. They forced him to really become a patient thrower and put the stress on the offensive line. And they felt like their defensive line could win the game. And as we keep talking about, the reality of football is if your D-line's playing well, then you got a chance to – it doesn't matter how the secondary plays. It matters how your D-line plays. The Eagles, perfect example. The Eagles last year, you know, they were better at linebacker. They're secondary. You could have attacked them last year. The problem was this year they got pressure on you. They had 70 sacks last year. This year, 43 sacks, no pressure. Oh, all of a sudden we don't have a good secondary. You didn't have one good last year. You just got away with it because of the pressure. Same thing with Michigan. They played really well up front.
We saw John Harbaugh was there for his brother Jim. Of course, John beat Jim back when the Ravens beat the Niners to win the Super Bowl. Jack Harbaugh, of course, the dad, the architect here of the family, who's got it better than us? Nobody. If you gave Jack Harbaugh truth serum today, Michael, which title is more impressive, John with the Ravens or Jim with Michigan?
Well, I mean, they're both – that marathon's hard to achieve, right? They're both struggles. They're both marathons. And so I think, to me, you know, this national championship in college football is such a hard thing to get into. You have to be in position. You got to play two games to win it. You know, I know in pro football you got to play a game. You got to win two games to get into the final, but then you have a week off to prepare. This is a little harder. I think the college thing, because of the landscape of college football, is much harder. But I think what Jim's done with his team, with all the controversy, with all the stuff around them, it didn't distract them at all. They embraced it. They loved it. They wanted more of it. Like, no, they were not deterred at all. Their focus was centered on, we're going to win this game. And I think really the TCU game was probably the greatest thing that ever happened to the program, because everybody came back with a resolve. They got embarrassed by TCU. They got embarrassed. They didn't expect it. They got outcoached. They got outclassed. They got outplayed. And now that helped them when they got ready to play a Washington team that's kind of similar, right? They're going to spread you out and try to make it a passing game. They rally to it. So I think you live and learn.
You know, it's funny because Blake Corum gets up there on the podium after they win the national championship, and he said, referring to that TCU game, unfinished business, and now we finished the business. Like, that's exactly what – because people are like, why is Blake Corum coming back? They're coming back for a common goal to try to win something, and that's exactly what they achieved.
Yeah, you could feel it, David. They were in that building, and you could feel it. It was August I was there. There was no game. The head coach was under – you know, he was going to get suspended for how many games because of – you know, buying somebody a breakfast at IHOP and didn't bother. I watched the practice. I mean, they were into it. And it all comes from him, right? He has incredible mental toughness.
Yes.
He has incredible will to win. And he did it as a player. He did it when he went to university. He's won everywhere he's been. He's a 71 win percentage coach.
10-1 for Michigan to repeat as national champions next year. But the bigger question is, that is incumbent upon if you want to play those numbers. Jim Harbaugh comes back to Ann Arbor. What do you make? Because you know the NFL is going to come calling. We know he's got an NFL agent, if you will, now. It's hard to figure out what Jim Harbaugh is going to do. But, boy, it does feel like...
Well, I could tell you, he won't go to Tennessee. He won't go to Tennessee. He's not coming in there to work for Rand Carthon. So you can scratch them off. I doubt if he would go to Washington if they hire – sounds like they're going to hire president of football operations and then they're going to hire the coach. That ain't going to happen. Mm. You know, so I think it's either going to be somebody comes after him and says you're going to – you can run the program. You can put your personnel guy in place. You got complete authority. You're the CEO of the company. Because that's what he is at Michigan, David.
Yeah.
He's the CEO of Michigan football. He doesn't call plays. He doesn't call defense. He handles recruiting. He handles the team. He runs the game like a CEO. He holds coaches accountable. He holds the players accountable. And I think unless he gets that deal, he's not going to go anywhere. Now, certainly Carolina should offer him that deal. If I were Washington, I would have offered that deal. But Washington has more people involved in the search than they actually have on their team. So, you know, I don't know what to say on that.
What a novel concept, holding people accountable. It's worked for Michigan, and again, 10-1 for them to repeat as national champions next year. Michael, so much to get to in the NFL. We'll get into some of the more of those headlines here. The big one, of course, Mike Vrabel, no longer the head coach at Tennessee. Come on back. The Lombardi Line continues. Start your morning with a daily dose of winning strategies, insider tips, and the latest buzz with the free VSiN Daily Newsletter. In today's newsletter, they examine win totals. Teams like the Cowboys that were predicted at 9.5 wins, well over that at 12, and even the Ravens could have got them at 8.5 wins this summer. So get expert analysis and the latest odds delivered straight to your inbox, absolutely free. Visit VSiN.com/newsletter to subscribe. Back alongside Michael Lombardi, Dave Ross here. We continue the coaching carousel. And it's interesting because, Michael, you know this, in Dallas, every year it doesn't matter, right? Is Big Mike, is he going to get fired if they lose in the first round? You have 12 wins. You just keep stacking 12 wins every year, like in the newsletter today. And yet the questions still get asked to Jerry about his coach. Is this what happens when you coach America's team? That it doesn't matter, Michael. You're going to get those questions.
Well, look, I mean, it's based on what the media wants to ask, right? Nobody in the media thinks Mike's a good coach.
And they all say he's
terrible. They all keep he's a bad play caller. Remember when Kellen Moore left?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you thought we were going to have a horse-drawn parade. You thought it was going to be like Lincoln's funeral. We were going to have to recreate it. How could we let this guy go? Mike can't call plays. Go through Twitter. Listen to all the analytical people tell you why Mike was a disaster.
I love it.
Mike's not media friendly. Why is Bill Belichick on the hot seat with 6 Super Bowls and Robert Saleh sitting there with a 33% winning percentage after 50 games and none of his coordinators are in trouble? Why? Because there's nobody in the media is driving that. They're going to drive Bill's a bad coach. Brady won all the titles. They don't like Bill. That's fact. And so that's what you read about. That's the information you get in front of you. They don't like McCarthy. They don't overlook it. He's on the hot seat. You know, he's on the hot seat. Well, I mean, he's done a really good job. He's done a way better job than Jason Garrett ever did. He did a way better job than he ever did.
Couldn't agree
more.
You know,
so, like, you just can't, like, and what happens is, in fairness to the media, they know they can influence certain owners, right? They know that, you know, that Mark Davis is going to be influenced by the media. So if he wants Antonio Pierce, they're going to push it. Like, they know you can't influence the Steelers. The Steelers pay no attention. But there's certain things, so that's where the story becomes, they don't let the story die. Like, Mike's done a hell of a job this year. The numbers, you know, now you take Philadelphia, you know, Philly struggled this year, and Philly is, they want everybody fired. They want everybody fired. Matt Patricia comes in and takes over. He's an expatriate. They hate all expatriates because they beat him in a Super Bowl once, even though they beat him once. You know, so he's a bad coach. We got to get rid of him. It's all based on what they think of. It's not nobody who's analyzing it. Who's studying the tape to say, boy, this Cowboy team's really, the other coaches are.
I ask
this question all the time. If you called up Andy Reid and said, well, where wouldn't you want Bill Belichick to go? He would say the Chargers. Right? I mean, That's really that's the only confirmation that matters. Who doesn't want to compete against you?
Great point. Great way, a very succinct way of putting it. And I again, couldn't agree more on the Mike McCarthy front. I loved, everybody's like, oh, Kellen Moore's gone. Cowboys offense is going to be terrible. They were much better this year. Big Mike calling the plays there. In New Orleans, this is so interesting to me because of what we saw with the victory formation and Jameis Winston basically saying, I did what I wanted to do, and I didn't care what Dennis Allen said. It led to Arthur Smith, and we saw that in the fiasco there in the 50-yard line. Allen says he expects to be back in the Bayou in 2024, which I think is what you normally would say when you're employed. Like, I expect to be going to work and doing my job. What do you make of the way that went down? Because, you know, again, according to X, it's either the greatest thing you've ever seen or it was mutiny on the Bounty. It does appear to me from the outside looking in, when you change the play call to do what you want to do, does that not show a level of disrespect to the head coach?
No, I think it really showed a level of respect to the player. I think they felt really bad about their teammate. I think they wanted to help their teammate. I think we're making way too much out of this. Really, I think we are. I mean, look, we're talking about this, okay? This is how little people know about football. We're talking about this ridiculous score that had nothing to do with the game because Arthur Smith is upset and he was angry. And no one's talking about Trevor Lawrence sneaking the ball from the 1.5-yard line when the guard pulled to block the outside guy when he changed the play. What's the difference?
Mm.
Was he being disrespectful to Peterson? No one's asking that question.
Right.
No one's asking. That to me is really disrespectful because that game was on the line. This game was meaningless. This game was completely meaningless. It had nothing to do with it. It can be handled internally. You know, look, they weren't disrespecting Allen, but see, nobody likes Allen. Everybody loves Peterson, think he's a great coach. You know, he's made Trevor Lawrence a much better player. Just look at it. You can't, but just look at it. So, but nobody says a word about that. If you want to talk about something disrespectful, that's the game on the line. You called a load play to kick out the end. You got the fullback leading up inside. I don't know if it would have mattered. And your quarterback tries to sneak it from the 1.5-yard line, and he can't even reach the goal line. No one – have you read about that play at all?
No, that's not talked about at all. That is
– Of course it's not, because they love Peterson. Nobody's going to mention that.
And
this is what affects us. How does that affect – it affects us in the betting market.
Oh, sure.
Because people listen to this stuff. And they say, oh, well, this guy, you know, they're believing what they're hearing instead of taking it back and saying, no, wait a minute, hold on. That's a non-story. Now, the story in New Orleans, it came out maybe today. Would they hire John Gruden to be the offensive coordinator? I don't know. New Orleans numbers, when you really break them down over the year, you know, when they were healthy and they did some good things, I mean, they actually got better as the year went on. I mean, they kicked the hell out of Tampa Bay in that game in the last game of the year.
Yeah.
Now, look, I don't trust them. You don't trust them. I don't trust Carr. He did play better the second half of the season when they were actually healthy. And you could see it. But nobody wants to look at those numbers. Everybody just wants to see, well, Dennis Allen got disrespected. I mean, when you look at New Orleans' numbers and you go through some of the things, I mean, they were pretty good, David. I mean, points per play, defensive rate. You know, what they were able to do. Their offensive line's 23rd in sack percentage. That's one of the worst categories they were in. When I break down my numbers, which I did this morning, I mean, New Orleans was really good in a lot of areas. They couldn't sack the quarterback, nor did they protect him as well. But everything else, they were really good.
To your point about it affecting us in the betting market, it's why Jacksonville was, you know, road favorites by 3.5, 4 points over Mike Vrabel in Tennessee. And it's we buy these narratives.
It was five and a half.
Yeah, you buy the narratives of all. Well, they're much better, and they got their heads handed to them in a game that meant the playoffs for them.
And nobody's sitting there saying, oh, well, they underachieved. And they did.
Right.
Now, you know, Mike Caldwell got fired. His offensive – everybody got fired. The whole staff seems like they're getting fired. They're going to keep Peterson, you know, and they're going to keep Press Taylor. They say, well, make Press Taylor – here's the one I love. They're going to let Press Taylor call plays. Like, Peterson's been calling plays. Like, whether Press Taylor calls plays or not, Peterson's on the headset. It's ridiculous. It's like people don't understand how the game's operated.
You know, I heard somebody say today, it was basically the solutions are leaving the building and the problems are staying in Jacksonville. That's going to be fascinating to watch. I heard Pete Carroll say, quote, I plan to be coaching this team, unquote, when asked about his future in 2024. Here's another guy that the media had fired 3 years ago. And, you know, they don't make the postseason this year. They rallied to win their last game, but come up a little bit short. Had that big win over the Eagles on Monday Night Football. I look at Pete similarly to Mike McCarthy, like won a Super Bowl, and yet it feels like they're always trying to run him out of town. What do you make of Pete in the Pacific Northwest?
Well, I think, look, you know, defensively, you have to be concerned. If you're John Schneider and you've worked with Pete for so many years, you got to say, what are we doing defensively? We can't stop the run. Is it players, coaches, or scheme? And I think that's kind of the conversation you have to have, is what is really going on here? What is going on? How do we fix this? Because really, when you break down their team, you know, everybody, me included, was when they let, you know, when they traded Russell, you know, who's going to play quarterback? They got to draft a quarterback, all that. But, you know, their team wasn't good enough around them. But this year, you know, they couldn't stop the run. They're 27th in yards per attempt. They're 31st in yards allowed on the ground. And when you play at a dome stadium, which essentially they do play, even though you get rained on, it's so loud there. It's like a dome. When you're 29th or 31st in yards allowed on the ground, you're not good on defense, especially at home with crowd noise. Like, if you let the Steelers go up there and run for 174 yards in a game you have to win, it's deeper than just the players are not good enough.
It's by the way, why have a half dome if you're going to get rained on? Like, just
yeah. Close. I don't think the people, well, some people don't get rained. I think the end zone guys, do there.
I think you're right.
It's like the University of Washington is the same thing. Everybody's covered up except the field.
I think they think that's an advantage of playing up there in the Pacific Northwest for the traveling.
I think you have to. If you live up there, you got to enjoy a good rainstorm. I mean, if you don't, you all should move. I mean, if you get depressed by rain, you're leaving town.
You don't stay in Seattle. Not the right place to be. When we come back, let's go to Will Hill. We're going to catch up with Will. His thoughts on what he's seen, what he plans to see this weekend in the NFL as well. And Michael, we still have a lot more news and notes around the league that we'll get to in hour number two, because it certainly doesn't start and end with the news of Mike Vrabel today. So a lot more to get to in that regard as well. Don't go anywhere. Back with the King of New York next year on the Lombardi Line. Become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. Get unlimited access to our VSiN.com/picks page. If you know me, you know I love the futures market. Sitting on a ticket, Ravens +1250 to win the AFC is the number one seed. Keep hope alive. So for more VSiN Pro picks, become a VSiN Pro subscriber today. The Lombardi Line will give you 10% off an annual subscription when you use the promo code Lombardi. So get in there today and get access to all of those pro picks. Another guy that we love to get our pro picks from, Michael Lombardi, is Will Hill. As our VSiN contributor, follow him on X as I do. Very entertaining follow at Not The Will Hill. And now he is the host of a new pod, Should Have Bet More. Will, let me just say, I'm glad I didn't bet more on Washington last night. But overall, pretty good futures market in college football. How did you fare last night as we now are done in college football before we turn the page to the NFL postseason?
Well, I should have bet more. I liked Michigan. I liked Michigan in the under, so I did okay in the game. I, it's funny. I tried to jump in on a live team total, Michigan over 34.5. I kept getting spun and spun, and it wasn't available for a little bit, and that was fortunate because it landed right on 34. But I just thought Michigan would kind of lean on them. Game went The Washington D actually played a little better than I thought once they settled into the game. I just thought they were too small up front. I thought Michigan would grind on them, lean on them with the running game, and just piece together enough stops. And that's kind of what happened. Happy for Harbaugh. I know, Lombardi, you've written about Harbaugh for a long time. Back to the the runts and grunts. What was it, the basketball tournament? You already said they were playing for like a $2 trophy, and he was just crazy. So I've rooted for him for a long time. He's won everywhere he's gone. It'll be interesting to see where he lands here, but I was happy for him.
He's 71% winning percentage coach in the NFL. And what happened in Tennessee today is similar to what happened in San Francisco. He and Trent Baalke did not get along. You know, they started out as a good relationship when he went there. I interviewed for the GM job. They hired Baalke over me because I was Harbaugh's candidate. And they went ahead and hired Trent. And then Trent and he kind of, once winning starts to happen, there tends to be some conflict. And then that's when he said, I'm out of here. And he left. And he went, and he went to Michigan, and he won. But he's won everywhere he's ever been. He's been a great CEO. What he is a head coach. He's the old school head coach. He's not looking at his play sheet. He's managing the game. When he was really young coach, all he wanted to do was talk about situations. What do you do here? What do you do there? He was preparing for it. And it's the same with Vrabel. I mean, think about Vrabel. Vrabel, when he was the defense coordinator of the Houston Texans, was not very good. They finished like 20th, 5th in the league in numbers, but he was very good as a head coach. He knew situations. He could get his team ready to play. So, you know, I think there's more to that than just meets the eye. That's the job of the GM, is to get the head coach to believe he's a head coach, or else we're going to end up with games like Indianapolis where the head coach is buried into a play sheet and the game just left him by. You know, and he lost the game and he doesn't even realize it.
Yeah, it's fascinating, the style of coach. And, Will, I wonder if that factors into your handicapping now for the second season in the NFL. Because I look at DeMeco Ryans a little bit, and I go, there feels like a guy that wants to coach defense, to Michael's point, talk defensive scenarios, and figure out ways to get stops. What do you make of DeMeco and this young Texans team cutting their teeth here and now to the postseason, catching three at home against the Brownies, and everybody loves, who doesn't love the Flacco comeback story? What do you make of this one?
Yeah, I like Houston and Lombardi. I don't know if you told this story. Wasn't there a story where Harbaugh was falling asleep at his computer and he didn't know if he was going to work or coming to work? He'd worked so much and he woke up and he had typed 50,000 pages of the letter M because his nose fell asleep on it.
He had this back room in the Raider complex when we were in Oakland. And, you know, was working relentlessly. And his nose, when he fell asleep right there at his desk and his head hit the M key on the keyboard. And when he woke up, he had like 5,000 pages of M's. He's like, oh, my God, where am I? I mean, he's driven through a McDonald's, was supposed to pick up, food for his son's birthday party. And he went and paid and then forgot to pick up the food. So, he's focused on things and it's a completely different world. And I just think, to me, I respect him because he's a leader of men. He's a head coach. He played the game like Vrabel. And he leads and he holds coaches accountable and he holds players accountable, and he's been very good there. Look, you want to hire one of his assistants, you're going to have to pay a tax. Every one of his assistant coaches have a buyout on their contract. He did that because he's tired of seeing coaches come there for a year and then leaving.
Sorry, Dave, I got us off track.
No, I
Houston
love it.
Plus the three here. I just think you're getting – now, look, these teams played on Christmas Eve. It was 36-22 Cleveland. I think you could throw that game out. That was Case Keenum. To me, I'm getting the better quarterback. I'm getting the home team, and I'm getting the three. Make sure there's a lot of games around three. Make sure you shop around, and if you like the dog, you're taking three. If you like the favorite, make sure you're laying the 2.5. Do not get a bad number. That's the key number.
Yep.
But and I worry, I'm sure Lombardi, you have some thoughts about Schwartz facing a rookie quarterback. But I just think this Cleveland team is still, they're so injury riddled. I think Flacco, it's a good story, but people are getting caught up in a little bit where there's probably a game coming down the road at some point, whether it's here or the next round, where he turns it over and there's a reason why this is why he was out of the league for so long. So I'll take the points with Houston. I think it'll be a competitive game.
Well, I think, if you're Houston, right, Will, you're saying, look, we got Amari Cooper's not getting 265 yards in this game. Like, he's just not going to do it, right? We're not going to let him have 265. They did a good job on Njoku. They only gave him 44. You got to have those big play. First play of the game was a post over the top, but the safety never got back, and they just kept making big play after big play. So I'm with you. I think Houston will play better defensively. I'm just not sure that this game's going to get down into the fourth quarter like it did last week. And, can they get the stops? They did a good job on Myles Garrett, but can they continue to do that? I think that's going to be the hard thing. And I know playoff time, it really comes down to third and two. third and three, third and four, red zone, first and goal. You can't have fourth and goal at the one and not come away with points. So I think it's going to be interesting. This field goal kicker for the Texans, you know, he was out for two games. He hasn't missed a kick. He's missed one over 50. That makes a huge difference.
Yeah, it should be a tight one, you would think, down there in H-Town. Let's go to Sunday slate here very quickly, gentlemen. And I know you're attacking this Cowboy-Packer game a little bit differently if you're shying away maybe from the 7.5 or the total here of 15.5. Will, what's the way you're going to attack this one?
Everyone's going to tease the Cowboys. I'm going to tease the Cowboys. I'll be right there. I expect them to win. What could possibly go wrong? I do think they'll win. I don't want to lay the 7.5. You worry they're up 14 or up 10 late and Love gets them in the back door. But this Cowboy team, they're 8-0 at home. They've averaging 37.5 points per game at home. I'm going to play the Cowboys team total over 30.5 and just say, hey, they're going to get into the 30s here, probably the mid-30s. Green Bay's the middle of the pack defense. And if you look at who Green Bay's played, it's been a soft schedule of opposing offenses, opposing quarterbacks, where, you know, they didn't play San Francisco. They didn't play the Bills. They didn't play Dallas. They avoided a lot of the top offenses. They didn't play the Ravens. You know, they did play Mahomes, but we know that's a diminished product that Kansas City has. That was the one good quarterback, and maybe Herbert, but even, you know, that team hasn't been great. So the opposing offenses would scare me if you're looking at Green Bay. I just don't know that they hold up defensively here. I think Dallas gets a lot of points in this game and, you know, finds a way to win. I don't love the 7.5. I'd probably lay it before I took it, but team total over, I think, is a good play.
Were you shocked by the 7.5? Did you think it was, didn't it like strike you as maybe that's a little too much?
That's about where I thought it would be. I mean, it's Dallas at home. They know people are going to love to bet the Cowboys. They're a public team. They're a popular team. They've got a good offense. It'd be interesting to see where this line closes. I mean, do you get it down to 7? Do they get that, you know, that steam that you love, Lombardi, that brings it down to the 7? Or does it stay at the 7.5? That'd be interesting.
You know, but I think you make a great point. Look, they Bryce Young, when they went on the road, the Packers, Bryce Young had his best day as a pro. Mm-hmm. I mean, Tommy DeVito beat him on the road. You say, well, they're playing better defense now. Well, okay. I think when they know the opponent, right? Remember the game last year that they played against the Cowboys? I know David will remember that game up in Lambeau. And I think that game has relevance here. I really do. That game was week 10 of the season last year, and Dallas built that huge lead. Dallas got up 28-14, and they couldn't stop Green Bay. And Green Bay wasn't as good as they are offensively last year as they are now.
Yeah, that was the Christian Watson game. He just ran roughshod over the Cowboys secondary. So his availability would be a concern. But to get this done the way they have without a lot of these guys offensively, they have Aaron Jones back. It is dicey as a Cowboy backer here, so I can understand the reservation. But, Will, I'm with you. I think we're going to get a lot of points in this game for sure. Very quickly, got about 90 seconds. Chiefs and Dolphins, his number's been on the move a little bit, up to 4 now with the Chiefs. I can understand it with all the injuries to the Miami side. Will, how are you playing this?
Yeah, it's funny. I'm still an old school guy. I take notes. I have pen and paper, notepads all over the house. If you write down all the Dolphins injuries, you're going to run out of ink. You're going to be in Staples before you know it, getting more pens. They are so beat up. And look, Tua's got two fatal flaws. He struggles in the cold and he struggles against pressure. He's going to be dealing with both here. Single digit temperatures. Spagnuolo will know how to bother him. I don't love laying over a field goal with this Chiefs team. They have nobody on offense that can catch the ball. I cannot get behind this Miami team. I'll take the Chiefs here.
Yeah, I agree, Will. I wrote about it today. I think that, like the Eagles, don't pay attention. Teams that just don't turn on the magic, right? They just don't turn on the magic late in the year. And this injury report, to me, is devastating. I mean, they lost Van Ginkle, too. He's not going to play. They have no rush. Their three best rushers are out of the game. Mahomes should get no pressure at all.
It's the state of affairs in the NFL. Who's the healthiest team at the end of the year? I kind of feel for the Dolphins. This is a rash of injuries, certainly at the wrong time of the year. Will, it's a great name for a pod, brother. Best of luck with it as you continue on. Should have bet more. Fantastic. Come on back. Hour number 2 of the Lombardi Line straight ahead.